My name is Adam. I'm an alcoholic. Want to thank the group. Thank you for inviting me to come talk tonight. It's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. Ultimately, it's a responsibility to give back what was so freely given to me. Welcome to, you know, anybody that's new. If you're trying AA again, if you don't want to be here tonight, you know, if you don't think this will work for you, sorry it's come to this. You know, I didn't get to AA because I had a bad weekend. You know, I had a couple of bad decades. And for me, like a lot of us, I mean, eventually this becomes a matter of life and death. I mean, every meeting has their perpetual newcomer, especially, you know, if you live in a smaller community. You know, we see that lost soul. I live in LA. I mean, before COVID, we had 3,000 meetings a week. I stood up in my area for 17 years. I mean, it was just ridiculous. I had so many chips and key takes. We know the drill, right? I could have played poker with them. Yeah. And I remember one secretary saying, give them back. You know, and I did that walk of shame over and over and over again. And looking back at that experience now, I thank God for the unconditional love of the old timers. A lot of the old timers in our area that, you know, aren't with us anymore. A lot of those guys that died 20, 30, 40 years sober, and they watch me come in and out of their rooms. And they would say things to me like, don't even bother taking chips. Just sit in the back. Shut up. No, but in a loving way, right? But they made it really clear to me, and if you're new, I hope you hear this. They made it really clear to me that if and when I was ready, because somehow they could see it. They could see it by my demeanor, my lack of interest, my fidgety nature. I mean, those old timers had the wisdom to see just by my attitude. The fact that I couldn't pay attention, they could see that it wasn't right now. But they made it really clear to me that if and when I was ready, that the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous would always be open to a drunk like me. And I think looking back at that experience now, if you're new, next to my parents, Alcoholics Anonymous is the closest thing to unconditional love that a drunk like me will ever experience. No matter how many people I burned, how many lives I destroyed, how many cars I wrecked, how many hearts I broke, how many jobs I lost, how many despicable, shameful things I did. And if you are, in fact, an alcoholic, it's the most shameful thing in the world to be the family drunk. Especially if you come from a large family like I do, where my mom had three sisters and a brother, my dad, three brothers and a sister. And I mean, she told them everything, right? I mean, from the time I was in middle school and today, 25 and a half years sober, there's entire groups of my family that will never, ever talk to me again in this lifetime. If you think all your amends are going to go seamlessly, it was horrific. Horrific. And, you know, like the first speaker said, you know, my mom and dad loved me. I didn't come from a broken home. I was a straight A student. I was atop of all my classes. I was an only child. You know, and you see the love and hope and expectation if you have kids outside these, you know, elementary schools. I couldn't see this. I couldn't see it through the lens of Al-Anon. I was unable, because of my self-centeredness, to see the kind of annihilation that I created in my family. But you see these, you know, parents outside these elementary schools where I live, they block entire streets, right, at 3 o'clock. We want to shoot them. Right? But no, I mean, it's funny, but my mom and dad loved me. And to watch those two souls, to watch my mother and father literally watch me burn my life to the ground, to the point where eventually my mother sold the family property. She moved and she did not leave a forwarding address when I was in one more institution. You know, that systemic family disease of alcoholism that I couldn't see. And I was shocked to come to an empty home after being released, right? And despite all of that, the doors of AA have always been open to people like me. If I lived to be 100 years old, I could never pay Alcoholics Anonymous back for the love and kindness. You know what some of you people have shown me? Not all. Hey, if you like everybody in AA, you know what it means? It means you're not going to enough meetings. My sponsor said, Adam, you don't really have to like anyone in particular here, but if you go through these 12 traditions, or you stick around Alcoholics Anonymous, you learn about resentment and fear and selfishness, you learn some of these ideas through this process, you'll learn to love people in AA you don't even like. And what happened to me is eventually I started coming to meetings drunk. Now, the very interesting thing about Alcoholics Anonymous 2024, if you actually see a drunk person in an AA meeting these days, people say things like, oh my gosh, what's he doing here? And I know it's ironic, but we don't see a lot of wet alcoholics in AA. And I don't want to bash the therapeutic community, right? I saw the druggy buggy out there. But like, I mean, for me, hey, no offense, but treatment would swoop me up in my most desperate moments, right? Throw me into yoga class. I mean, like, that's their answer, right? Kraft hour. Really? Kraft hour? I'm making belt buckles and bongs. Nature walks, please. I mean, I'm walking to 7-Eleven, right? Getting a big gulp cup, filling it up with liquor, putting a little Coca-Cola on top, walking into the late night candlelight Hollywood AA meetings, doing some of my best sharing. Really. It's so funny. We have a chapter in the big book. Anybody read the chapter to wives? I never read the chapter to wives. I never had a wife. Right? I mean, come on. Not on my very own. I need to stir it up a little bit for the Al-Anons. But it's so interesting because if you read the chapter to wives, it's explicit. It talks about the progression of alcoholism. Magic, medicine, misery. Sound familiar? Fun with problems, just problems. And it describes four types. Type 1, type 2, type 3. The fourth type of alcoholic described in the chapter to wives is the type of alcoholic that's been placed in one institution after another. Sound familiar? The type of alcoholic that typically drinks on his way home from the hospital. Sound familiar? And in the 17 years that I recycled through Alcoholics Anonymous, albeit in one of the largest groups of AA in the world, I still, with all that information, became that fourth type. By the time I finally got sober in AA, I'd gone through residential treatment for alcoholism 28 times. Right, not 28 days like the movie, this isn't Hollywood. 28 consecutive times, and I'm wearing that like some kind of badge of honor. I'm thinking that's what makes me an alcoholic. And I remember telling my sponsor, hey, I went through treatment 28 times. I was hoping that would like get rid of the guy, you know, loser. Go find someone that's willing. It's like I didn't want to ruin his batting average. And he looks at me and he says, you know, Adam, going through treatment 28 times, that doesn't make you an alcoholic. And I thought, you're kidding. He says, oh, no, that just means you paid $500,000 for a big book. And I didn't think that was funny. And I'm not going to start citing and quoting pages tonight out of the big book. But page 101 of the big book says, any scheme that attempts to shield the alcoholic from temptation is doomed to failure. See, treatment was a great place to fatten me up for another run. Treatment has its rightful place in recovery. Treatment probably saved my life. Right? Even Bill Wilson had gone through treatment. If you wonder what all the treatment centers and religions do have in common, it's obvious. They all send their drunks to us, right? Some people don't go through treatment. It's not a prerequisite for AA. But my experience with that institution is that it never solved the problem. Treatment never solved the problem for me. And as an alcoholic, I always thought the problem was alcohol. I thought it was liquor. And I remember someone in Alcoholics Anonymous saying to me, Adam, if alcohol's your problem, that drink, that shot glass, that 12-pack, that little glass of Chardonnay, if that's your problem, you're probably not an alcoholic. And then in the very next breath, he says to me, and if you are in fact an alcoholic, the type that's described in the doctor's opinion, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, your problem is an alcohol. And I'm like, what? I mean, it went right over my head. It was like some kind of cruel riddle. I remember drinking over that for years. But what happened to me, and we use the word in AA often, serendipity. What happened to me is that I got around a group of big book literalists, people in Alcoholics Anonymous that took the big book, turned the statements in the book into questions, and directed the questions at me. Very simple ideas. Like, was I incapable of being honest with myself? Did I, in fact, drink because I liked the effect produced by alcohol? Duh, that's a no-brainer, right? How about this? Was I restless, irritable, and discontent by nature? Was that my natural state before my lips ever touched alcohol? Good question. Was my greatest obsession that somehow, someday, I would control and enjoy my drinking at the same time? And the last piece, did I pursue that illusion, meaning just out of reach, to the gates of insanity and death? And as I went through those considerations, if you're like me, what happened? Because we use that term, what happened is for the first time I saw the truth. And the most obvious truth, what we call the external unmanageability, was crystal clear to me from the time I was in middle school. I'm in eighth grade. I'm already pissing in my pants. I'm already drooling on my desk. I'm already passed out under the bleachers. I overshot the mark from the first time my lips touched alcohol. My nickname in eighth grade was Space Cadet. I couldn't find homeroom. I mean, people are picking high schools. I'm already picking rehabs, right? But if you're new tonight, alcoholism comes in people. It doesn't come in bottles or six packs or 12 packs or kegs or shot glasses. Alcoholism comes in people. And the greater aspect of this spiritual illness, as Bill Wilson describes it, centering in my mind, if going through the considerations in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous shows me anything at all, it shows me that an alcoholic of this type, an alcoholic of my type, cannot really live without alcohol. Not successfully, not happily. And part of what it really means for me to be an alcoholic, if I'm honest about my relationship with liquor, is that I seem to have a mind that will consistently take me back to that first drink. If I really look at that relationship, every time I get released from an emergency room, a hospital, a fancy Malibu treatment center, right? Men's Central Jail, 5743, roll it up. It's amazing to me. I'm sitting in county jail for the 50th time in my cell, casually reading a novel, not a cloud on the horizon, because that's the way I do it. And I hear that number, 5743, roll it up. And suddenly, like Pavlov's dog, I have this visceral compulsion in me to drink that is so powerful that I can't even stop at the release module for my property. Does that not sound familiar? As soon as I pass that threshold, I make that decision. I have this compulsion in me that there is nothing on God's earth that's going to stop me. And I come to AA, and these well-meaning people say things to me like, well, don't drink no matter what. And I'm a literate person. I've read the book. I'm like, what happened to page 24 at the top where it says, quote, every alcoholic passes through the state where even the strongest desire is of absolutely no avail. It says my willpower will become virtually non-existent. And I don't mean to be divisive, but even Bill Wilson had said there's a world of ignorance and misunderstanding about alcoholism, even here. And when I hear these well-meaning people say that, don't drink no matter what, for someone like me, there's going to be a translation. And what it is go to meetings no matter what, work steps no matter what, maintain commitments no matter what, be of service no matter what, develop the discipline of steps 10, 11, and 12 no matter what. And just like the doctor's opinion says, this person who seemed absolutely doomed is suddenly easily able to control his desire for alcohol. What a powerful thing that is. And if you're like me, all of my life I was one decision away from a drink, probably two decisions away from state prison. And today, between me and that decision, there's a whole world called recovery. It's about people like you. It's about the rooms of AA. It's about our way of life. It's about this design for living. It's about a roadmap to spiritual success. For a lot of us, it's about this mystery we call God, which in many ways, this thing is really the product of these other seemingly unrelated actions that suddenly brings me to a place of peace and power and purpose. If anything at all, it is a deep and effective spiritual experience, but something that stands between me. And again, I don't mean to bash the therapeutic community, but you hear them throw it around a lot. Oh, AA has no evidence-based results. I'm like, really? Go to a world convention. Right? Check out Vancouver next year. I mean, if they'll let you in, right? But it's like, if you check out 85,000 5,000 of us at a world convention, which happens every 5 years. And you get into that stadium, and when they do the out-of-towners, it's like the United Nations. It takes 2.5 hours for every continent, every nation, every city, every township. And for every one of those people, there's a dad, there's a son, there's a daughter, a mother, a child. There's a world of people that will tell you AA is the most powerful thing in their loved one's life. And by the way, I hate to break it to you, you can't do that with your insurance. You probably have to get a plane ticket, conference ticket, hotel room, rent a car, right? But see, for those people that made that effort, there's something that seems to happen. That mystery of taking those actions. I was asked by my home group whether or not I was willing to take actions in Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't believe in. So what it really means for someone like me to be an alcoholic is it's almost like I have this mind, again, that continues to take me back to alcohol. It's almost like my default mode, like on a computer. And I, you know, where I live now is called Silicon Beach. It's really funny. We've got all these tech companies like Yahoo, Snapchat, Google. And a lot of these guys come into our meetings that are, they're engineers, right? They program hardware, software, very smart, right? They speak Java, right? Python. And here's some math. Right? There's a lot of smart people here. Spiritual math. Potential plus alcoholism equals zero. Right? But I couldn't see that. I couldn't understand because a lot of these guys are far my intellectual superior. We talk about the language that Bill Wilson uses in 1939 and how advanced it was for that time period, because we use the word program today all the time. It's common vernacular. But one of the definitions of the word program, if you look it up in the dictionary, very simple. It is a sequential set of instructions designed to do what? Bring about a result. Now listen to the parallel language. What do you do when you get a corrupt file on the computer? Well, it's obvious. You install a recovery disk, right? And what's the function of that disk? It restores the program to an earlier point in the process, just like the second step, the restoration of the original self. It never occurred to me that 10 and 11 really effectively become like the viral scan. That if I follow these very simple instructions, and this isn't true for everybody, a lot of people don't have to do this. But for someone like me, if I follow these directions, what happens when I get to 10 is I become mindful. I become accountable. I become transparent. For the first time in my life, I'm able to see where I paint the red flag screen. I'm able to navigate around the drama. I'm able to bookend my day when I retire at night and upon awakening. And I go through these very simple set of instructions. And what I get, and I remember my sponsor said it to me, because Adam, what do you want from AA? And I said, well, I grew up in Malibu. I want a yacht and a Learjet. And you know what he said to me? He said, if you work steps 4 through 9 and you develop this discipline of 10, 11, and 12, what you'll get, because I'm a taker, I'm actually here to get something. He says, what you'll get is a quiet mind and a loving heart. And I looked at him and I thought, what do I want that for? But if you're new, if you've got any distance from your last drink, you know exactly what the opposite of a quiet mind is. The first speaker talked about it. It's a mind that won't shut up. It's a mind that's up in the 3 in the morning, right? Telling me I'm a loser. You know that job you got, they're going to fire you, right? It might be telling you right now your significant other is with someone else while you're in this meeting. And the opposite of a loving heart is a vindictive heart. It's a prejudice heart. It's a racist heart. And all of my life, I've been crucified between two thieves, yesterday and tomorrow. And yesterday, I have guilt, shame, and remorse. And tomorrow, I have fear, anxiety, and worry. And really, the product of these very simple instructions is that I get peace, power, and purpose, that I can sit in the center of that and no longer be driven by those two things, those two thieves. It never occurred to me when Bill Wilson talks about principles before personalities, it was our founder's future hope that these spiritual instructions, these guidelines would have more impact than, I hate to say, the hysterical, untethered opinions in the rooms, because I love the fellowship. I love hanging out, going to Denny's, the birthdays, the weddings, all the stuff that we do here. But my mom would have parties with 300 people. I had the Dalai Lama at the house on the weekend. It was like she had a lot of really smart people. And for me, it was never enough. For me, the fellowship, and it says it in the second chapter, it is but one element in the powerful cement that binds us. And there's a warning there. It said it would have never held us together as we're now joined. See, for me, the fellowship gives me enthusiasm. It gives me inspiration. It gives me encouragement, hope, right? Brotherly. Some people are actually getting relationships and employment here. But if you put me into a large group of people like this without guiding principles, you know what happens to someone like me? My character defects thrive. I'll actually get sicker in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous without guiding principles. And what that looks like if you're new is consciously or subconsciously, I'll slowly become more separate, more different, and more alone. And if you haven't heard that terminology, it actually means separated from God, different than every single person here. We call that terminal uniqueness, right? And alone, you know that loneliness, that ache in the heart of every one of us that really has nothing to do with the proximity or closeness of other people. That loneliness at the core of my spirit. In fact, the bigger the crowd, the more alone I am. That loneliness, if you have that like I do, you know what that is? That's my inability to connect. And you put a couple of drinks in me, I'm calling people from fifth grade saying, I love you. I go right into amends. Get me loaded. And all of a sudden, I'm standing on the roof of my building, howling at the moon. I'm at one with the universe. A couple more drinks, I'm okay with me. All that self-hate you were talking about goes away. You put two or three more drinks in me, I lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in my fellows. Everybody drunk dialing at 3 a.m. See, alcohol does something for me that overshadows everything it does to me. And that's what the Al-Anons and the Earth people can't understand about us. They can't figure out why we get loaded. We can't figure out why you don't. And it's so funny because even the AMA, they classify alcohol as a depressant. 9 out of 10 people, they have a couple drinks. And they're like, well, I got to slow down. I'm feeling it. I got work tomorrow. I have a couple drinks and honey, I want to get married. Right? I'm trying to find the car keys I hid for myself before the first drink. I want to go to Vegas tonight. For me, alcohol is a stimulant. And unless I can develop that sense of comfort and ease that I'm seeking from booze through this spiritual process, a drunk like me will never stay here. That's why thousands of people come through these doors. Very few people stay. And what my experience with that is, if you take alcohol away from someone like me and you don't give me something better, I will never stay here. And right next to being separate, different, and alone, if you're new, there are three fundamental pillars of recovery for me. The first is to be protected by some kind of God. The second, to be accepted by self. And the third, to be connected to a community. And it's so interesting. You hear it every time we read A Vision for You, right? Abandon yourself to God as you understand God, 1 through 3. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows, 4 through 7. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Think about it. You abandon a ship, you think you can get back on? You know, you go to the ocean with a cup full of water. That's what you get, a cup full of water. I was told if I come to AA with everything, take all of me, take my will, take my life, show me how to live, like that other prayer we talk about. And I heard it in every meeting, and it never even occurred to me. You just read it in chapter 5. We ask for His care and protection with complete abandon. That was the first piece for me. The second was to be accepted by self in 4 through 7. And what that meant for me is eventually what would happen is I would no longer need internal or external validation. I would develop what's called an internal locus of control. You can look that up on your phone after the meeting. It's a clinical term. And the third piece, to be connected to a community. Protected by God, accepted by self, connected to a community. And I go from being the weakest link in my family. And I didn't understand that I was the product of generations of dysfunction. To 25 and a half years later, now the strongest link in that family. And I come from a family where my mother's brother committed suicide drunk. My father's brother committed suicide drunk. I come from a long line of suicide, mental illness, and alcoholism. I mean, sitting here now with that kind of change, It is said that alcoholism is the only disease, and it's predicated by the word spiritual, the only disease when treated that will actually leave the sufferer in a better position than if they never had the disease. I'd have never believed that. I would have never believed it until I got around people in AA that said things to me like, how free do you want to be? And I had to think about that. Free enough to just survive this? So when people say, how you doing? You can say, I'm hanging in there. He goes, I'll buy you a drink just to put you out of your misery. Or he said, do you want to be free enough to chase your dreams? Free enough to have relationships that work? Free enough to navigate around the drama? Free enough to match calamity with serenity? Free enough to learn how to stay in fit spiritual condition? And I saw it in these people. I saw that they had peace and power and purpose in their life. I saw that enthusiasm in them. The word enthusiasm actually means filled with the Spirit of God. And without getting too spiritual about this, in 1939, I've only shared this a couple times. It's not AA related, but the Oxford Group met at the Hollywood Bowl the same year this book was published. A lot of you can look it up on your phone after the meeting. 30,000 people went to that meeting. That's how big the Oxford Group was right around World War II. And they believe there were four things that blocked a person from God, and this is what they are. One, a luxury I will not forego. Two, a secret I will not confess. Three, a restitution I will not make. Four, someone or something I cannot forgive. And what they believe is if a human being was clear to those four things, the light of God, if you believe in that, or the light of the Spirit would shine through them like a beacon, and they would be forever changed. And what they called that was a conversion experience. Now, Bill took those ideas. If you look at selfishness, the luxuries I will not forgo, there it is, right? The secrets I will not confess, dishonesty, someone or something I cannot forgive, resentment, a restitution I will not make, fear. And if you look at 4, you look at 10, and you look at 11, it's asking me to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, the same elements. It's like when they asked Michelangelo, how did you make the statue of David? He said, I never made the statue of David. I just chipped away everything that wasn't David, and there he was. What a simple idea that was. You know, I was talking about it last night. I had had physics in college. I'd had trigonometry and calculus in school. I understood the ideas of inertia, velocity, centrifugal force. No one disputes the laws of physics, physical laws. And what was proposed to me was this. Why wouldn't there be spiritual laws? Why wouldn't there be just some very simple ideas that maybe if I took this information and I applied it to my life, I could experiment and have this kind of transformation? And my sponsor said, Adam, it doesn't matter who's wrong. It doesn't matter who's right. It just matters who's left. And I started looking at people with 10, 20, 30 years sober, like the guy that just talked for 10 minutes with 30 years. Telling you, how many times have you heard a guy say, I came to AA on a winning streak, I did all this work, and now my life sucks? I've never heard that. You usually hear people come here like the day before they died, right? And their whole problem is teeth, tags, and taxes. And 20 years later, they're talking about, you know, being at their daughter's wedding and, you know, going out. It's amazing. It is undisputable. But what I had to do, like a lot of us, I had to let go of my old ideas. And I look back now, if you're new, I look back at 17 years of failure, even in one of the largest groups of AA in the world. And if you're like me, what I see is my defiance towards spiritual principles. And what that is, if you're new, it means that I will argue with anybody about anything at any time. You tell me it's black, I'll tell you it's white, right? You tell me it's big, I'll tell you it's small. You tell me to go left, I go right with an attitude. Oh, and then I'll blame you for eternity. That's why we say denial's an acronym. It stands for don't even notice I am lying. Think about it. You can tell an alcoholic, you can't tell him much. Oh, you don't believe it? Try sponsoring somebody. And what that means, if you're new, is you can lead me into the gates of hell, but you can't push me into heaven. And when we talk about attraction rather than promotion in that 11th tradition, what that eventually meant for me is eventually, because we're planting seeds right now, Eventually, I would come back to AA on my own terms. Not because Sober Living wanted me to, not because my parole officer wanted me to, not because DCSF thought it was a good idea, right? Where I live on the West Side, they all get sober for the trust fund. But see, my experience is hope didn't matter to a drunk like me until I was hopeless. I remember living down here in Newport Beach, right, on a piss-soaked mattress in a $3 million house. And I'm like, back then, that's what that was worth, right? And I'm sitting there in this house, you know, and I've got $1 million, like whatever it is, in the bank. I've got a brand new truck. I've got a boat down in the marina. You wouldn't catch me dead in an AA meeting. And my experience, if you're new, is that God didn't matter to me until my back was against the wall. And this isn't gutter bravado, acknowledged. I got shot in a little argument right through me. And I'm laying on the gurney. I've got the paramedics over me with the paddles. And you know what's funny? If you're new, all I know is God. Have you ever been in a situation like that? Remember having your head in the toilet every morning with the dry heaves, puking your guts out? Who prays more than drunks like us? Come on. I mean, if you don't relate, you might be in the wrong room. And I'm not being divisive. It's so interesting because Bill Wilson talks about having this powerful white light experience, right? And right next to it, it says it was quickly blotted out by worldly clamors, most of which were where? Within himself. So I'm sitting in this cardiologist's office outside the emergency room, and the guy runs a cord through my groin doing an angiogram, and I got a TV screen behind me, and he's just pumping his dye through him, and he says, the bullet missed. I was drunk in half an hour. He shoved a tampon right through me, said it would heal from the inside out. I was gone. I went from, God, I will do anything you ask. I am your humble servant, please. Don't let my life end like this, please, God. To like, what? I got to get out of here before law enforcement shows up? It's like so quick. It is so fast. And the reason I'm saying that, if you are new tonight, there is a huge difference between the act of surrender that gets a newcomer into AA over and over and over again, and the state of surrender that's keeping the old timer here. It's a completely different concept. It's like watching a swan glide across a pond of still water. It's so beautiful. It's so effortless. It's so graceful. But we all know what that swan's doing under the water. He's paddling like hell. And if you're new, we have a chapter in the book. What's it called? Oh, Into Action. There's no chapter into feelings, into thinking, right? My sponsor said into whining from the podium at the noon meeting. It's like, get a job, bro. Awful. It's the way they treated me. And I think it's better that way. I don't mean to be disrespectful. That triangle, recovery, unity, and service. We have a therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy. It's very expensive. In AA, it's a dollar. And it's basically saying, I can't think my way into right living, but I can live my way into right thinking. It was suggested if there was a weight pile in the middle of this room, every day I lift weights for an hour, will I get strong? Absolutely. Does it matter how I feel about it? So I was told that triangle, recovery, unity, and service in AA translates into three actions: contribute, belong, and learn. The more I contribute, the more I feel needed. The more I belong, the more I feel wanted. The more I uncover, discover, and discard that which is blocking me from God, self, and others, the more that I can be wanted, needed, and loved in my life. I never understood it. But I did the action, and suddenly it made sense. It's basically saying my head, my heart, and my feet need to be moving in the same direction. I do this thing in this treatment center, and there's a poem on the wall that says, watch your thoughts, they become words. Watch your words, they become actions. Watch your actions, they become habits. Watch your habits, they become your character. Watch your character, it becomes your destiny. And our destiny tonight is to be in this room. My relationship with God, plus my relationship with self, plus my relationship with others, it equaled detox center. And what I didn't understand is these simple ideas can rearrange that equation and equal a life of peace, power, and purpose. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is still on the top 88 books in the United States Library of Congress. It's affected the lives of 30 to 40 million people worldwide. And you know why I don't think it's going to work for me? Because it wasn't my idea. What happened to me is I became teachable. This last thing. If someone had done to me what I did to myself, I would have killed them. If someone did to me what I did to others, I would have killed them. And then I come to AA and you want me to pray to God? I didn't want God to find out where I was. I was bankrupt in those finite relationships. If you really look at these steps by design, they remedy, acknowledge these three relationships. Steps 1 through 3, recreate and develop a relationship with God. 4 through 7, recreate and develop a relationship with self. 8 and 9, recreate and develop a relationship with others. A very simple idea. 10 maintains, develops, and grows my relationship with self. 11 maintains, develops, and grows my relationship with God. 12 maintains, develops, and grows my relationship with others. So coming out of the steps, this selfish, self-centered drunk, me, for the first time in my life, is able to live in harmony with God, self, and others. There was a great spiritual teacher. He was asked, what's the most important thing of all your teachings? And he said it. He said, love God with all thy heart. Love thy neighbor as thyself. And you know what? If God scares you out of AA and you're a real drunk, don't worry about it. Booze will scare you back in. So in 1 through 3, I give it up. 4 through 7, I clean it up. 8 and 9, I make it up. 10, 11, and 12, I keep it up. Very simple idea. Einstein had said, I would rather live my life pretending there's a God and finding out there isn't than live my life pretending there's no God and finding out there is. We all know that's Pascal's wager, but that idea, if you're new, do it as an experiment. Suggest, I was told, do everything we say for a year. If it doesn't work, we'll refund your misery with interest. And for the first time in my life, I got out of that 28th treatment center. And the guy that was running the detox said, why don't you come back next week and tell all the patients here how you managed to stay sober an entire week, if you can make it. And then he threw me off the property. And I was so hurt. You know, we're sensitive, right? I had such a resentment, kind of like tonight. I sat in 2.5 hours of bumper to bumper traffic, one side of LA County to the other, to tell a bunch of strangers in a detox that didn't care how I managed to stay sober another week. And guess what? I was tricked into service. All the years that I'd suffered with self-hate, all this morbidity and depression was because I wasn't willing to give anything. It never occurred to me. Read Bill's story. When he got out of that third trip through Towns Hospital, he said he was plagued with waves of depression. He'd lost everything in life worthwhile. And he got a little idea. Maybe if I go back in the hospital and talk to some of the patients, I'll feel better. That's all it was. We know the rest of the story. Silkworth was a double board certified physician in psychiatry and neurology. He allowed Bill Wilson to come into Towns Hospital. And what he witnessed from 1939 combined with Akron, Ohio to 19, those 5 years, he endorsed the book. He said, you can absolutely rely on anything these men say about themselves. That was a letter of credibility given to Bill Wilson on the Towns Hospital letterhead. This last thing, and I'll close with this. I get to fly a little bit. I'm at an airport. I'm dressed like this. I'm waiting to get on a plane. And this guy comes running up to me. He's wearing a slingshot t-shirt, right? Full body tattoo. He's got the teardrop, if you know what that means. And he rushes me at the gate. He's like, you don't remember me, do you, bro? And I'm like, you know, backed up against the wall. And I said, no, I don't remember you. And I thought he was going to hit me up for money. Real aggressive, right? And he's got these two little girls with him. He's got this lady by his side. And there's this awkward moment. Like I said, I thought he was going to ask me for money. And he said to me, 15 years ago, you spoke on a prison panel. Something you said changed my life. And then he said, these are my beautiful daughters. This is my amazing wife, my family. He says, we want to thank you. And all of a sudden, the wife starts crying. Now the kids are crying. Now I'm crying, right? A minute ago, I didn't know whether to run from this guy or call security. Now it's like the long-lost family from the old country. I swear to you, it was just so weird. And I remember calling my sponsor. My sponsor was like, Adam, you got a big mouth and a good memory. Don't let it go to your head. And he hung up on me. But there's two dates in a human being's life, the day we're born and the day we find out why. And if you're new, all my life, I thought it was about money, property, and prestige. Job, house, relationship, car, job, house, relationship, car. But you know what? Puke smells the same in a Mercedes. This is the bad news here. I couldn't fix a spiritual problem with a physical solution. Normal people can do it. Al-Anons can do it. They all want to fix people. They can do it and make money at it. I can't do it. Altruism is critical for me, that I do it from the bottom of my heart. That purpose, that peace. If you look at the seven-step prayer, the third-step prayer, our real purpose is to fit ourselves, to adjust ourselves to be a maximum service to God and the people about us. That is it. And that's what happened to Bill. Bill had a servant's heart. The grandiosity, the sensitivity, the emotional immaturity, the omnipotence, which are the four qualities, for him, like me, had to be broken. And as soon as I started to be helpful, what happened is everything made sense. Old Clancy said it better than anybody. He said, Adam, alcoholics need to feel useful more than they'll ever need to be loved. And if you're new, if you can just do that, if you're open, there's some amazing people here. I already know who some of these people are when I came here. There's a lot of time here. There's people that can help you here. Help is the dirtiest four-letter word in AA. And one of the definitions of hell is if God were to show me all the things I might have accomplished if I'd only believed in myself. But you know, I couldn't believe in myself. But I believed in you. I believed in the people that greeted me today. I believed this meeting would be here. Thank you very much.
All right, let's thank our speaker, Adam, again.